well, we could do anything in digital space. We have, like, potentially the digital equivalent of, like, 100,000 kilometers, you know? Or intervening into a system, why are we just building things that look like normal art galleries in these digital worlds?
I'm very excited to greet Sarah Friend today for our new edition of Weltkunst podcast, Was macht die Kunst? And I'm here to talk about video games with her. Sarah Friend is a Canadian artist living in Berlin, and she has started out as a painter, but has switched to NFT-based art, video games, and all kinds of things that we will find out about in these coming minutes. Welcome, Sarah Friend, and thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
When you were a child, how did you first experience art?
Well, actually, I had quite an early start as an artist, and it's a funny story. My grandfather was a painter, not like professionally, but very keen, keen enough that one of the spare bedrooms he turned into a painting studio. I lived with him for a while when I was a child. I had a single mother, so we lived with my grandparents, and I spent tons of time with him in his painting studio. And one day, I was working on a drawing, and it was a bird, and it was a cereal box mascot drawing of a toucan. And he snatched it from me and submitted it to an art exhibition in like a juried exhibition in my hometown. And he didn't tell them it was by a five-year-old. And it actually got in to the exhibition and caused like a huge stir. They were very angry when they found out that a five-year-old had made it through their jury. It was kind of a classic, like, my kid could do that abstract art troll moment that probably has a lot to do with where I am now. fun fact, also, I will share that my mom still has that drawing on the wall of my childhood home.
And how did you then decide to study painting? Was this like a first experience that already put you on the path?
Well, I really think that my grandfather being so keen on art, I was actually always quite encouraged. I think a lot of families maybe don't, you know, place so much importance or awareness on art, but I was always in art summer camps and in art classes in high school. So, I mean, really, it's what I've always wanted to do.
You were graduating and had a focus on painting. So you had brushes and oil or acrylics, and you were in the medium and painted away.
I was a figurative oil painter. For my thesis there, I pivoted very suddenly to abstract paintings, and I was making monochrome black work, so not exclusively figurative. But then, yeah, I felt like I made a complete departure from this and got into the software industry and have been, well, I mean, reflecting lately on how it all comes back in a way, especially as I, you know, enter into the art world again from software. I've even found myself, you know, referencing some of the things I studied or wrote about all those years ago. I guess the things you do are always hard. Well, they're hard to escape. You can't escape yourself.
So I imagine you painting a black canvas and then you somehow switch on and it's a screen and you dive into the digital realm.
Well, not a good image, yeah, pretty much. I've actually been working on an edition of all black images called Off, and they're the pixel dimensions of various screen sizes. And of course, I'm like definitely thinking about the history of painting there a little bit too. Sort of like the default state of a screen is this solid black image in a way, so...
But so you say you were working in the software industry. Was this kind of a pause from artistic work for a while? How did that come about?
Yeah, it was a bit of a departure and felt like a departure at the time. As I'm sure you can imagine and hear from many young artists, if you have a painting degree, often you need to have some other source of income. So I found myself working in a fab lab, doing technical drafting. And so that would be like making files for laser cutting or 3D printing. And through that work, I met a lot of software developers, which was something I had always been interested in. I actually minored in digital media, but I think I'd never encountered software, and especially not encountering it in a way where I felt like I could be part of it. I had all these ideas about who should be a software developer. I was like, surely you must have to be like very good at math. Maybe there's calculus involved, do you know? Like from the outside, you might think these things. And then, yeah, by meeting them and by working adjacent to them, I realized that none of that was really the case. It was actually a lot more approachable than I expected. And I taught myself from there. So I worked for a few years in my mid and late 20s in industry.
And were you, at the time, were you still in Canada, or you also went to New York later?
I was in Canada mostly, but I spent a summer in New York at a place called Recurse Center, which is kind of like a residency, but for software developers. So people go at all kinds of sort of career transition points, or if they want to take on a new ambitious project. Some people transitioning out of academia to industry, for example. So I did that for a summer in New York, and I did also work for a New York-based company, but I did that remotely from Canada.
So it sounds like pretty much from the early days of your software days, you were inspired to use this technology for your art.
Yeah.
And so how did the first digital artworks come about? Was that a struggle, or did it come easily?
Actually, I think of software in a way as like the way it fits into the story is like my thesis, antithesis, synthesis moment. You know, if painting was the thesis, the thing that I started with, and then this antithesis of like, I'm going to leave art. At one point, I thought I was like, I'm quitting art. I'm going to go work in the software industry, you know, but then kind of ironically, software is the thing that brought me back. Actually, my very first software project was a game. It was a text-based adventure game that I made just to sort of teach myself. I started working on it, oh God, in like 2013 or 2014. And so I guess maybe they fit together quite naturally in a way.
So this was an artwork?
I think of it as an artwork. It's also a game. It's a very weird game.
Can you explain a little bit?
Definitely. So you play, it's in the command line. So I don't know if you've seen the command line. Maybe it's like this black box that you type in and you make little prompts into it. And that's sort of like the base, the bottom of your computer, sort of. Underneath it all, like that's what your computer is. And way back in the day, like when I was a kid, actually like playing games in the command line like that was much more common. I actually made some when I was in grade school that I never really pursued on, but it was a fun thing that we all did for a while. So you play as a rock buried deep beneath the ground, and you can't really move or perceive anything. It's kind of like a philosophical game where you think about what it would be like to be a rock, and sort of what the rock might speak like. And it became for me kind of, visually, the command line is all black. So the screen is black, and it's just these little text-based prompts that you see. And so the rock is black, and the rock is literally deep underground. But then also I started to think about this metaphor of like speaking to a rock, like does a rock have language, as also maybe being metaphorically about my own process of learning to write software. You know, the computer is a glorified rock, actually. It's all these minerals that we've taken and transformed into this machine. And in learning to write software, I'm learning to speak to it and speak its language. So maybe there's like these two layers happening in the game. And yeah, there's no graphics. It's, I think there's sort of like a world of video games that you, maybe like more contemporary video games, actually, that are like lots of action, fancy graphics, probably shooting things or dying repeatedly, maybe stressful slightly, but there's actually a pretty huge expanded field of games outside of that, games from different eras in history. I tend to be interested in the weird ones.
You are also a curator of a gallery that exists on Minecraft. Tell me about the gallery, Ender Gallery. You're a curator. You also brought it to life. How is this in terms of organization and collaboration? And how can we, let's say someone who doesn't play Minecraft, how can we imagine Ender Gallery?
Yeah, this is sometimes a bit of a jump to explain to people. But we started Ender Gallery in end of 2020. And I was thinking about doing a Minecraft artist residency, and I approached two friends in Canada who actually were the first people I thought of to be residents, Jonathan Carroll and Kat Blemke. And they have a studio there called Speckwork. And when we were talking, you know, they got so into the idea that I was like, how about you come on board and like, we'll just do the project together. And they were working at, a gallery in Canada called the Mackenzie Art Gallery. And the Mackenzie Art Gallery came on as a sponsor as well. And so we did four artist residencies followed by four exhibitions. And that part is, you know, residencies and exhibitions is a traditional art world format, but the part that is different about the Minecraft setting is that we actually give them the whole server in a way. So Minecraft is a game that when you're playing it, you're usually playing it on your laptop or a tablet. But if you're in multiplayer mode, you might be logging into a server run by anyone from the community. One of your friends could be running it, or it could be like a big sort of more commercial server. And we decided to set up one of those. Like, people do performances where they walk from one side of the Minecraft world to the other side of the Minecraft world, and it takes them years. So it's like the conditions of the space are completely different. It's sort of an opportunity for an artist to make something architectural in scale in this virtual world that they couldn't really make any other way. Minecraft is a game, but it's also kind of like a game engine or tool for making other games with. I guess I've talked about what we've done, but I haven't fully spoken about the seed of it or why we started, which is in some ways it was a response to digital galleries in the pandemic. Because I'm sure you remember, there's this moment when everyone was trying to make digital galleries, and I kind of felt like I wasn't seeing the version of it that I wanted to see. And in particular, I was like, well, we could do anything in digital space. We have like potentially the digital equivalent of like 100,000 kilometers, you know, or intervening into a system. Why are we just building things that look like normal art galleries in these digital worlds? And actually it's been a couple years now, and the typical version of an online exhibition has gotten a lot more creative than it was then, but Ender Gallery was our sort of attempt to do something fun in this direction also.
What are your thoughts on the aesthetics of video art? I mean, including, let's say, Ender Gallery, the logo of Ender Gallery looks almost medieval. How does this aesthetic come about?
I think that there are sort of tropes or types of imagery you see more often in games. You see a lot of like fantasy imagery, historical imagery, and sci-fi imagery. A lot of games, I think, are interested in building world, like, well, the exhibition that we are speaking about, maybe in some ways world building. So a lot of games are doing this, and they're going somewhere that we don't in reality. I don't know that that's unilateral, though. I think that maybe something like the aesthetic of video games as a whole is hard to generalize, because though you have a game like Minecraft that has this like retro, pixelated, medieval crafting vibe. You also have something like Call of Duty, which is as high fidelity as it can be, set in contemporary worlds, and in sort of the more indie game world, you have things which are like all types of cartoon, things which are versions of this high fidelity aesthetic, but in a mundane or domestic setting. I feel like, if anything, if I was going to generalize about the aesthetic of video games, I would say it's probably limited by, historically speaking especially, limited by what's been technically possible, though. And that's less and less true. But if we're thinking about Minecraft, like, why is it so pixelated? Why is it these blocks? I think a big part of it is just that, you know, you have to get all of these graphics to render. And if they're small and simple, that's easier. And so there's sort of been this acceleration in the video games industry towards higher and higher fidelity graphics. And maybe, like, indie games have gone, almost rebelled against it with, like, a cartoony, deliberately retro aesthetic.
I mean, what were you thinking, for example, when Beeple, a work by Beeple, sold for $69 million last year? For me, as an art historian, looking at the actual images that are connected to this work, it's a little bit confusing, let's say, because we have certain art historical references, or we have a certain idea of what is, you know, avant-garde and what is exciting in terms of art and what is, you know, not so great in terms of art. So let's say in aesthetics, the female figure often has a very thin waist and is very accentuated. And it's, many things seem to me like, you know, poster design of the 1970s, 80s, maybe even 90s, but something that a teenager would put up over his bed or her bed. This is kind of the aesthetic. And then I love that art always reinvents what's high and what's low. And that low can, you know, I mean, how did people talk about Andy Warhol when he would, you know, do pop art and have soup cans on a canvas, you know, screaming, oh my God, that's, you know, I can imagine that traditionally this would have been seen as a big no-no. And maybe, but I can't really wrap my head around it, that the aesthetics of, let's say, what Beeple does are so contrary to what people think is good art. What are your thoughts on this?
Oh, well, there's a lot there. We don't have to like Beeple just because he sold this NFT for a lot of money. I mean, personally, it's not what I'm into either. At all. And if anything, I mean, my own feeling is maybe a little disappointed sometimes that that is the story that everybody knows about what's going on with artists using the blockchain. That's the one they know as Beeple, if they know nothing else. And that's, well, I think there's so much going on that is interesting and is good that I would like people to know about also. So, yeah, and I mean, video games are, it's a huge industry, and it's an industry, and I think that a way to approach it from coming from within the art world might be the way we would approach something like the film industry also, where, you know, there are films which we can approach as the art world might approach something with a great deal of thoughtfulness. And there are also films which were made knowing that people are going to watch them when they're tired, when they got home from work, when they're having a beer with a friend. They don't want to think too much about the film, and it's really there to be funny. Or, and that's a different modality. And I think that there's space for, you know, films with many different modalities. And I watch thoughtful films, and then I watch dumb films too, like I think most of us do. And so I think the video games industry is like this as well. There are video game creators who are very thoughtful, who maybe don't prioritize the funness of the game, They think of it as being a different kind of experience, maybe an encounter with beauty or something that's thought-provoking or giving you insight into a person's life that you might have not seen yourself. And then there's also like games which are sort of like trying to hit the dopamine triggers and serving a different cultural purpose. And so I think that, well, seeing that there are game industries within the game industry, really, is an important place to start. And maybe the same with crypto art. There's blockbuster crypto art that, and then there's a million different subsets of it, actually, if you were going to sort of draw them out.
You were talking before that your way into the software industry was because you were, as a painter, you can't make money as a young painter. But can you make money as an artist who works with NFTs today? Are you making your living with your art?
To some extent, yes, but not fully. I also do teaching, and I still do small software contracts and advisorships. There's been an appetite for NFT collecting, and I'm grateful to have an audience there. But of my existing NFT projects, also, I have priced them in a way that is very affordable, actually borrowing from indie game pricing. Like, you know, if you buy a indie game, it's probably not more than like $20, you know? And the sales model is very different from the commercial art world. It's selling many, but for a low price, as opposed to selling one thing for a high price. So I've taken that sales path with my NFTs, and I'm happy with it. But if I were working in industry on my NFT editions, I would have made more money. Like, you couldn't hire me to make my NFT projects for what I made for my NFT projects. So NFTs have not solved all of artists' problems, this is to say.
Yeah. You have a project called Lifeforms. And this is NFT-based. Can you explain to us what this is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lifeforms is an NFT edition where the NFTs are like digital entities that, like any living thing, need to be cared for in order to stay alive. And the way that you care for a life form is within 90 days of receiving it, you have to give it away. So I think of this as game-like, it's minimal, but maybe there's, you know, like if you remember the Tamagotchi moment, and I had them when I was a kid, or all these games where you care for and raise digital creatures. I feel like Lifeforms is adjacent to that, though it's quite abstract. And yeah, these are the Lifeforms.
Do they all look different? I saw these blobs that have no defined contours, but they are like, let's say, dusts of color that move across the screen. How do they change during their life, or how do they, can you take care of them well and they look different or behave differently than, let's say, when you starve them?
Mm-hmm. You don't have to feed them. The only thing the life forms need is to be given away.
Okay.
If they stay alive, aka keep being given away, they will keep evolving. They're going to evolve pretty soon again. But yeah, they are very abstract, just these kind of glowing. I want them to be kind of soft and gentle looking, you know, but they're abstract, otherworldly beings. They don't have like recognizable faces or anything. There's a lot of NFTs that are with, you know, like cartoon faces, but I didn't want the life forms to go quite in that direction. They have a little sentence that that describes them. So if you make one, it might have a sentence like, "A garden requires patient care," and you know. And then they have status updates, so they report about how they're doing to you. If you check back on the page regularly, your life form will, when you first receive it, it'll be, you know, perhaps happy to meet you. Or doing great, or excited to be here, or something positive. And then as it gets closer to the point where it has to be given away, it's going to start to get more anxious, and it's going to tell you, like, life form number 26 is feeling cramped. Life form number 47 is feeling afraid. And so they do give you these little, it's all very minimal.
We heard a little bit about the audience already, because that's with life forms, you have an audience of people who take care of these creatures. What role does the audience play for you in general in your work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I think about it all the time. Because the work is often interactive, it's usually online. There's a layer of it happening on social media. Maybe it's like I'm interacting with the audience a lot. Maybe more than artists working in other media. And for some of my projects, I might be like in a group chat with the audience, or the people who are engaging with the work. So I'm talking to them all the time. And there are moments where it feels kind of like a collaborative relationship. I think another thing that's interesting about the audiences for my work is there are almost sometimes different ones. As well. So with a project like Life Forms, there's an online audience of people who are caring for the life forms. And then there's also audiences that might see them in an exhibition but aren't part of the crypto ecosystem and encounter the sort of sculptural form of them. And so I sometimes feel like those are both sort of different audiences that see the same work, but through a completely different place.
I like this word you just used, the crypto ecosystem. How would you define it? And in my maybe naive mind, I would imagine that it's mostly male, mostly English speaking, mostly, I don't know. How would you describe this world? And How are you part of it, or how does it make you feel that you are maybe not the typical crypto ecosystem, how would you call it, creature?
Creature is a fitting word since we've been talking about the life forms. I think that, well, I mean, first, it is a very male space. So is tech in general. So is software development, so is video games. And I've been working in spaces like this for a long time. And that has a whole bunch of things that come with it. Sometimes it's difficult. I've definitely had experiences which are negative. But I also have this phenomenon where, you know, you spend so many years in an industry, at some point you sort of get used to it. Like, I sometimes say, like, I feel like I'm a tech bro. It's just like, obviously I'm not, but so I do feel, I don't know, accustomed to it, you know? It is also definitely English-speaking, though being a English speaker myself, I can't comment so much on how much is going on in maybe, you know, other language communities. I know there is a pretty huge community of crypto users in China.
How does a cooperation with other artists work for you? You mentioned some already for Ender Gallery. How do you collaborate? Do you also meet in person, or is it, how does it work?
Mm-hmm. Well, I live really in an online way. So Ender Gallery, I know the co-founders of Ender Gallery from, we used to live in the same city. But actually I have not seen them in person once the entire time that we ran Ender Gallery. It's been years since then. So there's a lot of remote collaboration. But I do feel like completely at home taking meetings online. It's almost like I don't even notice that it's different. And but I notice also that I'm much more comfortable with this than everyone.
Yes. One important thing that I want to talk about a little bit, or I want you to talk about a little bit, is what's coming up. And that is Hans-Ulrich Obrist curating this show on video games at the Julia Stoschek Collection in Düsseldorf, starting in June and then running a whole year. Mm-hmm. That's a first, I think, in Germany, to have a big show on video games as art, and to hopefully draw in a public that usually does not come to a museum or a gallery. So you will have work in that exhibition too. Mm-hmm. What is it going to be?
Well, it's going to be a video work. So not a video game, but it's a video work that is about video games and maybe about metaverses and also about currencies. I am so excited for the exhibition. There are so many artists that I love in it. And they put together a catalog where everyone answered all these questions about their thoughts on video games. And I wrote mine, and as I was writing it, I was just like, I can't wait to read what everyone else has to say about this. So yeah, my piece is a short video, sort of about a character who's living in a video game-like world, maybe in a metaverse, where there are many different overlapping currencies and economic systems, which are all functioning differently. And she's sort of always swapping between them as need arises. And it's kind of an investigation in some ways into the interfaces of video games. So this heads-up display that you see when you're playing a video game is kind of a secret text that tells you what is important. It tells you what the game values, what you need to pay attention to, and what is rewarded. And this is actually not only true of video games. This is true of all online sites. They're all sort of like speaking to you under the surface about what they value and place importance on. And so it sort of uses these as a language to illustrate or sketch out how these different worlds might work. But then eventually the character finds an item that she can't load in the game. And from there, she starts to question and sort of fall out of the metaverse in a way, or fall out of this maybe somewhat utopian world that she's been living in. It's just a short little video, so we don't really get to find out too much. It's a very suspenseful ending, I think. But yeah, that's the project I'll be showing. And like you said, the exhibition is up for a year, so it will be evolving over the course of the year, which is an idea I quite love. It's like the exhibition is maybe game-like in a way, or at least it's a changing system. And so I don't even know what work I will be swapping in. We'll be deciding this at some point, but I think other artists will be changing their work as well as it is up.
If time travel was real, what place and period would you like to visit?
I would visit the future.
What is your most important tool?
My computer.
If you were an animal, what would it be?
I think I'd be a snail.
Which game do you like to play?
I'm probably playing Minecraft the most. To any listeners between the ages of 10 and 20. But I've also been playing through the Tale of Tales backlog lately, and I would really recommend it for short, small, unconventional, peaceful games.
What's your favorite color?
Green.
Do you have a recurring dream?
No.
Do you listen to music while you work?
Usually no, but I do listen often to chatty YouTube vlogs.
Which topic would you like to see in an entire issue of Weltkunst?
Oh, I mean video games.
Can you share a wisdom?
I could think of, I mean, my grandmother has a pretty good wisdom, actually. My grandmother is one of my favorite people. And she would always tell me to be careful because things can own you.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you very, very much. Weltkunst, was macht die Kunst, is brought to you in association with Christie's. 2021 marked the 50th anniversary of Christie's in Germany, and 2022 brings new opportunities for more extraordinary art and objects. Visit Christie's.com to find out more about the world's leading auction house since 1766.